From KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Barbara Leeming is my guest. She's written some very fine biographies, including her great book on Orson Welles. She's written about both politics and show business, with books on Churchill, President Kennedy, Roman Polanski, and others. She has written most often about women, including Betty Davis, Marilyn Monroe, Katharine Hepburn, and Rita Hayworth. Her new book is Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, The Untold Story. Barbara Leeming, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Hi, Gary. Thank you so much for asking me to come.
You know, you've written many books about men, but are you particularly drawn to women's stories?
No, I think I'm particularly drawn to great stories, first of all, because, I mean, you have to remember, as you pointed out, I wrote about Orson Welles very, very early in my career, with Orson talking to me for hours every day. And one of the things that Orson drilled into my head was the idea that you look for a story, and the way that you find a great story very often is with a great character. And so for me, I think it's a question of, not a question of sex, but a question of the character that I find or the story that I find. And I've written about Orson Welles and Winston Churchill, and I suppose they don't come any better than that. But I've had an extraordinary experience with this latest book, and not because it was a woman, but because of what the subject matter of the book really is. And I think that's, when people have asked me again and again and again, you know, why possibly would you write another book about Jackie Kennedy? There have been so many of those books. And I had a very specific and really serious reason for doing it. And it's because I discovered in the course of particularly writing about Jack Kennedy, that Jackie had suffered from PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder for 31 years, and nobody had ever written that story. And at a time when hundreds of thousands of our veterans are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan with PTSD, it's terribly important for us to really understand what it means to suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. And Jackie's life story and the story of her suffering, but also of her survival, I think can help us to understand that in a really unique way. And that's really why I did the book. I mean, it's because of the PTSD that I wrote it.
Right, and you kind of use that as a kind of a frame for, well, really retelling the story, because you'd written about Jacqueline Kennedy before.
So I wrote about her as First Lady, yes, I did. Yeah.
Right, so how did you discover this? I mean, you had written about her before, but you were unaware of this situation?
Yeah, when I wrote about her as First Lady, I mean, first of all, I didn't deal with the aftermath of the assassination, but I didn't know at that time. What happened, it's a really actually very interesting story. 15 years ago, I saw a letter, and it was at the time that I was working on the Jackie as First Lady book. And I saw a letter in the Bodleian Library in Oxford, in England, from Prime Minister Harold Macmillan. And it was a letter that Macmillan had written to Jackie just after the president was assassinated. It's basically a condolence letter, a very long one. And when I read the letter, I thought, this is very strange. Why is this man talking to her about the soldier's experience in war? Macmillan had been wounded very, very seriously in the First World War, and he's talking about that, and he's talking about the effect of that on him, but he's also talking generally, comparing what happens to a soldier in war with what had happened to her in Dallas, and he's asking all sorts of what seemed to me then very strange questions about God, and it just didn't make any sense to me. But even more than that was that in the library at Oxford, there was a huge correspondence between Macmillan and Jackie. So I saw her response to this letter, her first response, and then the response that went on for years afterwards. She said to Macmillan that this was simply the most important letter of her life. This was the letter that saved her life. And years later, I'd see she'd be quoting phrases from the letter and talking about how she remembered the color of the ink. And I thought, if this is important to her, I've got to understand this. But I couldn't understand it, but I couldn't forget it. And I kept thinking about that letter. And while I was doing interviews, particularly a lot of the interviews that I was doing in England for my biography of Jack Kennedy, people were talking to me very frankly, people who knew Jackie really well and saw a lot of her in the years after the assassination, and they were talking to me about things that she was doing and things that she was saying. And at the same time, I was also uncovering letters from her that people hadn't seen before. And I began to get some sense that Macmillan was onto something. And eventually, I started reading about post-traumatic stress disorder because I was talking about Vietnam and what had happened to the soldiers then. And I started reading the scientific literature about PTSD very deeply. And I began to see, as I interviewed people who actually suffered from PTSD, that what they were talking about and what they were experiencing and what I was hearing and what I was reading in Jackie's letters was precisely post-traumatic stress disorder, which, of course, didn't exist as a diagnosis until 1980. So nobody knew this was what she had, but it is absolutely obvious that Macmillan had understood that her experience of trauma was very, very similar to the experience that a soldier can have in war. And it was once I saw that, I realized that you should go back and look at the whole story. I mean, who was the young woman who was in that car in Dallas when her husband's head literally blew up inches from her face? I mean, that's as bad a trauma as you can have. Who was she? And how did she live with this? And what was it like? One of the things that's great about her, and particularly in the letters that I found from her, she has a very strange language, and it's particularly in the letters, she has the capacity to describe her experience in a way that not just makes you see what it's like to live with PTSD, but makes you feel it. She's got a very visceral kind of language. And what's really fascinating about it is that I thought, first of all, what's important is she gives you the capacity to put a name and a face to PTSD. It's, for most people, I mean, even though this is something that's in the news every day, most people don't have any real understanding of what it means. It's just abstract. If you can put Jackie's name and her face to it and hear her describing it in her language or hear people recounting what she said to them, you can understand it very, very vividly. But also the other thing that's very unique about her story is that this is a national trauma. I mean, this is something that we all saw happen. I mean, if you didn't see it on television at the time that the assassination took place, you've seen the Zapruder film since, or the stills from the film. So we've all seen the traumatic event that Jackie experienced, and that makes it a very good way to go into a very difficult and complicated story. And that's basically how I came to it. And then I went back and looked at the whole story from beginning to end with this, you know, understanding.
Yeah, I mean, we all shared in the trauma, although we weren't all sitting there in that.
But we saw it, and it did. I mean, some people really were traumatized by watching it. But one of the things that I think is so interesting about it is that, for example, when you understand what somebody like Jackie is, what's happening to her when she has a flashback. I mean, that was one of the first things that I began to understand about what was going on with her. When she's having a flashback, and you're talking about a PTSD flashback, first of all, it's something you can't control. It just happens. You don't know when it's going to happen. It suddenly happens. But it's not what we think of as memory. It's not like if you or I were saying to each other, oh, I remember what it was like when I was in such and such a place. When Jackie has a flashback, when she's describing it, she is literally back in the car in Dallas again. It is happening again to her. And that kind of a flashback, the first time you see it in her story, it's really actually very, very interesting. When you see somebody realizing, oh, this is more than somebody remembering something bad happening to them. This is somebody having it happen to them. Just a few days after the assassination, Jackie gave that very famous interview to Life magazine in which she hatched the myth of Camelot. And the reporter from Life who did that interview was a man called Teddy White. And when Teddy White did the interview, he took notes, and he left those notes behind. He gave them back to Jackie, and he left them at the Kennedy Library, and they were sealed for years. And when they were finally opened, what's in those notes is actually much more fascinating than what's in the Life magazine interview, because what Teddy White talks about is exactly what if he's seeing something and he, again, doesn't understand it at the time. But what he's describing is this. He said he was sitting there with her in Hyannisport, which is where they did the interview, and he said when you come to what he calls the blood scene, when suddenly the blood scene took over, he said there was something really unsettling about it, because as he watched her and listened to her, he realized she's not here in this room with me. She's someplace else. Oh, she is literally in the car. And he saw that, and he was frightened by it. You can feel it in his reaction in the notes that he's writing. And that is what's so terrible about that kind of a flashback. And it made me realize not just, I mean, he's not the only one who described this. I mean, Sissy Ormsby Gore, who was very close to Jackie and saw these kind of things happening, who was the wife of the British ambassador in Washington at the time of the Kennedy administration. And Sissy was seeing these flashbacks so much that she said at a certain point, it was making her sick. I mean, but it wasn't just the gory details. I mean, because Jackie would describe the ridges in Jack's brain, or talk about the holding the bones from his skull in her hand, or the smell of the blood or something. And the gory details, as he said, were, you know, literally making her sick. But almost worse than that was the sense that when this took Jackie over, she couldn't help her. She couldn't reach her. She couldn't, because she wasn't there. And that, you know, makes you understand, I mean, what must that be like for the husband or the wife of a young soldier who's 18, 19 years old and seeing this happen to somebody, and they can't help them. They can't get to them. And that kind of thing, I mean, Jackie had the capacity, her story has the capacity to make you understand it. And one of the other things that I was hearing a great deal about in the aftermath, and she was talking about it at length, was the constant going over the details of what happened in that car and saying, you know, if I had turned my head a second before, I could have saved him. Or why didn't I recognize that the what I thought was a backfire from the police, you know, motorcycles was actually a gunshot. It's my fault. I should have been able to save him. Well, what you're talking about there, first of all, is survivor's guilt. Why am I here and why is he not? Which you hear a lot from the soldiers. But also, it makes you understand when you listen to her saying this over and over again that she would rather feel as if she could have saved, as if she was guilty for not saving him, than to actually come to terms with what is so awful about trauma, which is in a traumatic event, you can't do anything. It's something out of your control. You are absolutely helpless. And that kind of helplessness is so terrifying that very often you'll see what you saw with Jackie, that she'd just rather say, oh, it's all my fault, than to accept the fact that this thing is so horrific that she, you know, that she could do nothing about it. It's such a complicated set of reactions, and you think, you know, we saw so much of her in the 30 years after the assassination, and yet we didn't understand. We didn't have any sense of what was going on. It's kind of amazing when you look back on it. It seems so obvious, but of course it wasn't obvious to anybody at the time.
We're talking with Barbara Leeming, and her newest book is called Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, The Untold Story. You made me think of a jillion things while you were talking there. One would be, it seems to me that when you talk about those what-if moments that are going through her head, you know, maybe some of the conspiracy theories that abounded are the rest of us trying to come to grips with, you know, rather than just simply accepting it, that there had to be a gajillion things that happened. That
I think you're precisely right. I think that's exactly where you go, because one of the things that's so interesting, and again, her story isn't very easy place to see it, is what's so interesting is how society reacts to a trauma. I mean, when you see that happen to a young man who's the president of the United States, who has all kinds of guards around him, who one would think would be as protected as anybody could be, and his life is in as much control as anybody's could be. Well, no, you're forced to realize when his head gets blown off like that, that in life things are random. Things happen which we do not control, and we don't like remembering that. And one of the things that we do is to say, okay, you know, there's a logical, meaningful explanation for this. Well, there is no meaningful explanation for this. And also what happens, one of the other ways that society reacts to something like that is to sometimes attack the victim. And in the case of Jackie, twice she was massively attacked by society. And we have kind of forgotten that. I mean, we remember her as if we always loved her. We remember her thinking, oh, you know, she was this great symbol at the funeral and we all admired her for the rest of her life. Well, that's not true. In 1966 and in 1968, the United States turned on Jackie Kennedy in an absolutely savage way, and a way that was so damaging to her. I mean, as Bobby Kennedy said of her reaction to the 1966 attacks, she's just crushed. He called her this poor little girl who did nothing. That's when she tried to stop the publication of William Manchester's book, a book which she had commissioned about the death of the president, the book The Death of the President. And when she commissioned the book, clearly it became obvious later, it wasn't clear then, her whole purpose was to somehow be sure that she didn't ever have to see this again or think about this again, and that she was going to control him. And when it came time for the book to actually be published, she was absolutely, I mean, unable to bear the idea. When you see her letters and you listen to her on tape talking, even talking to Lyndon Johnson about this, she's talking about being just in a trance and never going to feel anything again. This is so horrible. What am I going to do? I can't walk down the street and see advertisements for this thing. I mean, this is, you know, she knows what's going to happen to her. She's going to be back in that car and she's never going to get out of there. And she's desperately trying to stop it. And she went to court and tried to stop it. And the press, what's amazing when you go back and you look at it, what suddenly appeared was, this woman is trying to prolong our memories of the assassination. This woman is an actress. She is not really feeling any of this stuff. This is all just a spoiled brat who we're tired of. And, I mean, you sort of can't believe that now, because you think, of course she would have been hysterical at the idea of having this out there. But at the time, that isn't how it played. And it was just a horrendous thing. I mean, one of the things that for me was utterly fascinating, actually, in this story is Jackie's relationship to William Manchester, because Manchester was the only person that she talked to at length about the assassination. She gave him a series of interviews, and that was it, except for the Warren Commission, who she talked to, but much more briefly. And Manchester, as it turns out, also was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. He had been traumatized in Okinawa in 1945, did not know that that was what was wrong with him until later. He then, later on, did understand it and wrote about it. But at the time, the two of them are in a room together, and because of what's going on with both of them, they're just toxic for each other. It's horrendous what happened in that. And it's in the first spring. It's just months after the assassination. And Manchester is fueling her with drinks to keep her talking, because what he wants from her is every detail. He wants her to remember everything. And he wants her to do that at a moment where she is spending every night trying to forget, where she's waking up with screaming nightmares. And when those interviews were over, that's the moment when Jackie suddenly starts talking to the priest that Bobby Kennedy had brought in to try and help her about killing herself. I mean, I think it's absolutely vividly clear that those interviews sent her over the top, and she was very, very close to killing herself. And the only thing she says in her letters that kept her alive was worrying about the children. You know, what would this do to the children? And she didn't, obviously she didn't kill herself, but she went through this whole thing and then was attacked. And then of course, when she married Onassis after Bobby's assassination, the whole country, the whole world turned on her. I mean, I can remember that at the time, all the headlines saying she's killed Jack Kennedy again. She sold herself to the highest bidder. And when I remembered that and I saw, I mean, there are two letters that I can't get out of my mind from that period. One of them was to Robert McNamara, who was probably next to Bobby, the most important protector of Jackie in this period. And nobody's ever done anything with McNamara. And the letters from Jackie to McNamara are you know, I had them, and they are very, 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 very important, not just for her, but for the history of the Vietnam War, because they're incredibly revealing of McNamara and what was going through his mind. It's a very strange, very complicated story. But when Bobby was killed, she wrote McNamara a letter, and she said, she keeps talking about him as her comrade in love and blood, and she's going in again and again about how she's going to be annihilated and how she knows she's going to be annihilated now and that there's nothing she can do except accept that it's coming, it's going to happen. And she's talking about Teddy and the wine on his lips being like the blood that's obviously going to be there and they're going to be, all be killed. And then she also wrote a letter at very much the same time, just this is all just before she announces that she's marrying Onassis, to Joe Alsop, and Joe Alsop was a journalist who she'd known for years and she was close to. And she said to Joe Alsop, "Look, I will never love anyone again. I will never allow myself to care about anyone again." She's certainly not marrying Onassis for love. She's marrying Onassis for protection for herself and her children. And if you think about it logically, he sounds like as good a bet as anybody. If you can get any kind of protection, you get a man who has his own air force, who has his own island, who has his own yacht that's a former destroyer, who has all the money in the world to hire guards, and who has enormous, enormous power. And in the beginning, I think he did make her feel a little bit safer, but it didn't last very long. It ended in horror, because when Onassis's son was killed, he blamed Jackie, and it just was grotesque by the end of the thing. But before that, we had all turned on her, and I think that is very much what society tends to do. At a certain point, Jackie became a reminder of all the violence that the assassination of Jack Kennedy had unleashed in the 60s, Vietnam, the race riots, the assassination of Martin Luther King, then Bobby, and it all just somehow circled around her, and we were very happy to get rid of her. It's just as if get rid of her, and we can forget about what has happened. We were tired. We didn't want to remember what had happened in that car, and that it was a random act of violence. So it's very important for a story for understanding society's reaction to trauma.
We're talking with Barbara Leeming, and her latest book is Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, The Untold Story. In the light of the post-traumatic stress syndrome situation, you think about the paparazzi popping out at her every 2 seconds, and I remember Hustler publishing pictures of her sunbathing nude and things like that. That must have really not just been... I mean, as someone who knows a lot about the intersection of entertainment and politics...
Yes, it's true. I mean, the intersection for her was very unfortunate, but it also, you're right, the paparazzi was an enormous problem for her, and particularly that kind of thing when somebody jumps out, and she again went to court many times over this, trying to stop, you know, Ron Galella particularly. Ron Galella was the worst of the offenders, because he deliberately wanted the shots of her looking like she looked in at a moment of attack, and except it's an aesthetic attack. But I mean, for her, the aesthetics meant nothing. What it meant to her was that somebody is going to come after me again, and she, like anybody with her experience, lives her life in a constant state of waiting for the next attack. And so if any time she's walking down the street, suddenly this guy is going to jump in front of her. I mean, this is just a living nightmare for her. And again, when she went to court, again, people kept saying, oh, she's faking it. She just likes the attention, or she's spoiled, she wants privacy or something like that. And it seems, I mean, what I was fascinated with as I was putting the pieces of the story together is how obvious it all seems. And I guess that's partly because I'm old enough to think, oh, I didn't understand any of this. And I criticized her, and I thought all these things. And now I just can't believe that I did. What's most amazing, I guess, in the whole thing is that after Onassis died, she did something really, really remarkable. I mean, you never get over post-traumatic stress disorder. It doesn't go away. But what she did at a time when no one knew what was wrong with her, because remember, for her, this is worse than it would be if somebody said to you, okay, this is what's wrong with you. She thought she was crazy. She was constantly being told to get over it. I mean, even by somebody like Bobby, who loved her. Bobby didn't understand what was wrong with her. He thought she was grieving, and he'd say, get over it, Jackie, you know, my crazy sister-in-law. But what she did eventually was, basically by herself, she improvised ways to survive. And in that sense, it's a very inspirational story. I mean, she built a life in which she had a remarkable measure of control over her PTSD. I mean, it never went away, but she was able to live a life, and she did it with very simple things like, you know, physical exercise, by creating routines, even her editing, where you can make the story come out the way you want it to come out, helped her. I think she found a man who was the absolute opposite of Jack Kennedy, someone who came into her life, a life that worked for her rather than her going into someone else's life. And there was a wonderful moment, you know, very late in the story, where somebody asked her, she was at a dinner party, and somebody asked her, you know, what did you think, Mrs. Onassis, was your proudest achievement? And clearly the man thought that what she was going to say was, oh, I redecorated the White House, or I conquered Paris, or something like that. And instead, she didn't miss a beat. She just looked at him and she said, my proudest achievement, I kept my sanity. And that's an incredible thing. I mean, she did keep her sanity at a time when no one knew what was wrong with her, when she was repeatedly attacked by society, and when the worst thing that can happen to somebody who suffered traumatic experience, when the trauma was repeated, when Bobby was killed again and repeated the whole trauma in an era of violence. So it's a kind of remarkable story of survival. And I, again, thought that, you know, she deserves to have that story told. She did something incredible. If she thought this was her achievement, well, we need to listen to that. And in addition to that, I hope that maybe somebody else will be able to profit from seeing what happened to her and understanding a little bit more clearly just what that kind of suffering is. Maybe it's important history. I mean, there's a lot of politics in this story, and very, very important politics. I mean, not just the Vietnam War, but the way that she was used in the transition from the Johnson administration to the Kennedy, you know, from the Kennedy to the Johnson administration. She's a political pawn in this, and an important one. And that all of that story is very important. But it's also, I think, an important history for our time at this moment because of the crisis with PTSD.
Yeah, it's a fascinating and important book, and it's called Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, The Untold Story, and the author, the brilliant Barbara Leeming, my guest. Thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
Thank you so much, Gary, and thank you for the kind words. You're really very, very nice.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, and you can like us on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, Barbara Leeming. her newest book, Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, The Untold Story. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.